Welcome. This is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. The mainstream media continues to tell half-truths about the Chinese coronavirus and spins some of the population into a hoarding frenzy. But the president has masterfully taken control to prevent the virus from spreading in the U.S. Is the virus spread the only concern, or are there untold circumstances that the virus may cause that could harm our national security? Well, we're going to discuss this with my next guest. For my new listeners, Major General Paul Vallely is a West Point graduate, a retired deputy commanding general for the U.S. Army, a veteran of two combat tours in Vietnam, and a graduate of the Industrial College of the Armed Forces and the Army War College. Throughout his 32-year military career, Major General Vallely served in positions such as infantry company commander, intelligence officer, operations officer, and military advisor. His theaters of operation included Europe and the Pacific Rim countries. He has over 15 years' experience in special operations, psychological, and civil military operations. General Vallely has served as a military analyst for the Fox News Channel and is a guest on numerous nationally syndicated radio and TV talk shows. He's a best-selling author and the founder of Stand Up America. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Major General Paul Vallely. Well, welcome back, Paul. It's so great to have you with us again, and happy St. Patty's Day.
Thank you. We'll be having corned beef and cabbage here in Montana to celebrate this evening.
Well, I don't want to disrespect St. Patty's Day, but we have to take a little sidebar here because our discussion is about some very potential serious situations that could occur, and the virus is one of the reasons this could happen. So President Trump has been doing a stellar job of containing testing and dealing with the ramifications of the Chinese coronavirus outbreak, but the coronavirus has non-biological effects on our national security as well. Paul, would you share how the coronavirus affects our national security, especially concerning borders, finances, maybe global positioning of countries and such?
Well, when we're talking about national security, what we're really talking about are threats to America, threats to our citizens, whether they're a war type of a threat or a terror threat. And in the case of a virus, that's a threat. We've just completed a paper, which I'll be happy to provide to you at some point, which lists all the external threats and internal threats to America now in 2020 as we look forward. And certainly this virus has taken on a whole new form in the world compared to past viruses or pandemics that we've had. But when we deal with national security, as President Trump has done with China, is try to identify to the American people how destructive China has been globally, as well as to the United States. And if we look at the facts, Audrey, this virus started in Wuhan. Now, whether it started in the animal market or in the seafood market there in Wuhan or in the laboratory, that's where it emanated from. And then it has spread through traveling Chinese and others, a lot of Americans in Wuhan. I mean, that's 11 million people. We had sports teams over there. We had other individuals. But the Chinese Communist Party is worse than the Russian propaganda machine ever was, much more sophisticated because of our technology today. They continue to cover up. They lie. You can't depend on them. So we're not charging that against the Chinese people, but the Communist Party over there, very deceptive. They've even blamed our U.S. Army for creating the virus and distributing it through the world. But this virus, you know, to take on what it has in the last 3 weeks and closing down our businesses, sheltering everybody, like you mentioned earlier, New Rochelle, It's serious. I understand the virus spreads three times quicker than the flu virus. So that means sequestering. That means what they call social, what do they call that now? Social
distancing, yeah.
Just distancing, there you go. And that's probably all good. I held an event last Saturday night. We had 651 people in the Flathead Valley in Montana for Charlie Kirk, the head of Turning Point. And we all turned out, but we're lucky here in Montana versus areas such as in New York and other areas of the United States, which has been heavily affected. So.
Yeah, sure. Well, New York City, I mean, you have a large Chinese population in New York City that goes back and forth to China, first of all. We also have an illegal immigration problem. It's a sanctuary city. So that's a problem because the hygiene is questionable. And that's a problem for us, for Americans, because we have a higher quality of hygiene than they do in third world countries. So there's our problem here.
Well, and the other part of it, these idiot politicians. Yeah. Idiots, total idiots. And I'm not going to say who in New York, but you know who they are.
Ooh, you could say New York, de Blasio, you could say it.
I mean, these are not problem solvers. They're no. Totally partisan type of political hacks from the left-wing Democratic Party. Yeah. So they'll do anything to push this on to President Trump administration, whereas the president's been out of the box for over a year now on China. And the supply chain and all things related to China. So he's the one that's taken the initiative, as past presidents never did. But yet they want to blame him that he hasn't been reactive enough and proactive enough in this. And he has. He's formed a great team with the corporations, health organizations, the CDC, and Dr. Fauci probably is one of the best men in the world to be able to track this and manage it for Vice President Pence. So I'm very confident in them right now to get through this. I think we're going to get through it in the next week or two as far as going over the hump and being able to get back to some normality.
Oh, I agree with you. And it's disgraceful of the Democrat politicians that have been trying to find ways to blame President Trump when he's doing a brilliant job, and they never said a word about H1N1 under Obama. And 60 million Americans were infected with the swine flu, and over 12,000 died from it. But you didn't hear a peep out of them, did you?
No, that's right. Did I ever tell you the story of my enlightenment several years ago?
No.
A total enlightenment. And it happened in Cairo. I was invited over as a head of a delegation to meet with then head of the armed forces, General al-Sisi, of course, who then became president after the second revolution there. And the Obama administration had cut off all the military aid as well as Congress, to General al-Sisi. So I'm sitting 6 feet from General al-Sisi in his office, and the generals that were in the room, about eight of them, are just really so mad at the United States since we've been allies for 45 years. But General al-Sisi turned to me and he said, "Why does America always seem to solve its problems looking through a political prism versus looking through a reality prism?" And since that time when I came back, I've been trying to tell different politicians, once you get elected, that's a political thing, but once you get in office, please try to solve America's problems by looking through the reality prism as an objective analysis. But they still refuse to do it. President Trump does look through a reality prism.
He does.
But that's the enlightenment I have, and it's very true and more true today than ever, that we can solve problems if we look through the real issues down deep and not put a political partisan hat on it.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Democrat Party, the communists have their tentacles around it, and they are focused on power. They really don't care. I mean, any decisions they made for the coronavirus, they're really not caring about the citizens. they are caring about being in power, and that is the problem. You're correct. See, President Trump is not looking at it that way. He cares about all Americans. He wants to see this gone from our country. But you're not seeing decisions coming from the left that concern the American people. Instead, it's how they can get one up on him, which is, it's disgusting and it's very immature.
No, there's no doubt about it. And it's to the detriment of the citizens of the United States. We'll have to see the turnaround here, hopefully, in the next 2 weeks, and that we can get beyond this, and through this isolation and distancing of people in groups is going to thwart the spread of the virus, especially in our high density population centers and with the elderly people. So the president has a good plan. He'll work that plan with his team. He'll keep us informed, but we need to get everybody on board with solving this problem. And we're in fact doing it to a great degree. There's no doubt about that. But we have to be objective and look at how it's affecting the people, because the people of the United States are not going to tolerate this sequestration and this sheltering for too long a period of time.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we didn't see, in some cases, we didn't see the best of Americans coming out because they were hoarding, which was pretty shameful. I've never encountered that before, and it's a shame that the world was watching that. So I hope that they'll calm down, like the president said, calm down. This is nothing to be, it's not a plague, and we need to relax, you know?
Yeah, and what's the deal with the toilet paper?
I'm still trying to figure that one out, because that's not a symptom, okay? That's not a necessary item for a symptom of this, okay? So I don't know what it is.
I don't get the toilet paper.
I don't get it either.
I know they were trying to, they had this one woman who came out that she would take all of her toilet paper storage, and she would trade it for a high-priced vehicle. I can't think of the name of it right now, but anyhow, they trade toilet paper for anything they can get.
It's
ridiculous.
Yeah, of course, it's the Wuhan virus, not the Wazoo virus. Okay, so
yeah.
I wanted to talk about for a second here about Iran. Would you share with us what the Cyrus force is and how they pose a threat to the Islamic regime of Iran?
Well, that's great. It's a group of Iranian dissidents that live in Europe and the United States. And they track back the history of the Persians and Cyrus the Great, who was one of the great Persian leaders, how he brought the country together in a very peaceful way. And so the Iranians I've been working with want to prepare for when the mullahs are taken out of the government in Iran, and to be able to pull together the six or seven different cultural groups of Iran. Iran has a very high Arab population, Azerbaijanis, Baluchistan. They have the Persians. They have what they call the monarchists, which basically were the follower of the Shah, now following Reza Pahlavi, the son of the Shah. So if you take those six or seven groups and unify them, and we also, with Cyrus Force, I'm their advisor, that we put together a draft constitution for the new government in Iran when that time comes, that a new government will have to be formed. And it's very well done, very well written. I'll be happy, you know, to provide a copy to you if you'd like. But that's what Cyrus Force is.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. It comes from the time of Cyrus the Great. So that's... you think that's possible, that they have a chance of, when that moment comes, of taking over from the regime?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if the regime fails, then you're going to have a new government.
Right.
And the people will have to form the government. And so the new draft constitution calls for the first year that there'll be representatives in their parliament from all the provinces and all the groups that I just mentioned inside Iran. And their representatives would select a leader, a parliamentarian leader, for that first year until elections can be conducted in the second year. Right. But there will be total representation from all of the areas of Iran, not just inside the city of Tehran.
Right.
It's very well thought out.
Yeah. Do you see any weakening in the mullahs?
Yes, absolutely. They've been weakening for about the last year and a half, and very severely now because of the pandemic in Iran, which is, I think, third behind Italy now in the number of people affected with the virus and the number of people killed. But the Iranian government is much like the Chinese Communist Party. They cover up, they lie, they're a propaganda machine. But we know the majority of the young people don't have jobs over there. The economy is failing. The sanctions have worked to a great degree, which have been placed on Iran. So from that standpoint, who suffers the most all the time is the people themselves. And that's why there'll be an uprising. The problem is they haven't been an armed protest because they don't have arms. And when they take on the Revolutionary Guard and the secret police over there, they're always batted down and defeated. But I think you're going to see that government fail within the next year.
Yeah, because the people I know loathe the Revolutionary Guard. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure they do.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I wanted to also talk about that we have several internal threats here. Would you share some of the imminent threats we face internally and how they affect our national security? I mean, considering like an ineffective Congress, sanctuary cities.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's take an ineffective Congress, both the House and the Senate to a great degree. Partisan politics played to the ultimate. And that's a threat to the American because they can't get the problem solved for the Americans. They continue with this partisan fighting. But we have Antifa, these they call anti-fascists, where they're fascist forces that are attacking on our universities and in our cities. You take the total move to socialism and communism in the United States that's very heavily pushed, by the way, in our universities is socialism. So our young students are getting propagandized in their first 3 to 6 months when the parents send them off to these liberal universities. And that's a big threat. The other threat, of course, are the opioids and the drugs being brought in by the external threat of the cartels. Mm-hmm. So when you look at these kinds of things, we have to, with any threat, and in my training in national security, you have a threat. You come up with the options to deal with that threat, and then you take decisive action to eliminate and neutralize that threat. Yeah. And that's what we do in the military, how we're taught to solve the problems. And that's exactly how the president's looking at it now. So, and you can't put a partisan hat on again, or a political hat. You got to look at it through the reality prism.
Right.
So the internal threats are alive. They're well. We have to be able to solve those from here on out to neutralize them, or we're going to have a weakening government and a weakening support of our Constitution and our freedoms. And that's what's at risk here.
Sure. A couple of other threats that are maybe external that have become internal are human trafficking and the MS-13. Isn't that true?
That's right, and that's tied into the Grand Cartel Organization, which is basically a large corporations now dealing in a number of things, not only in the drug business, but in sex trafficking. And we see that very big, for example, in Phoenix, Arizona, and along our borders. So it's even affected Canada to a great degree in the Vancouver area, as I found out.
Right.
So the cartels are a threat. I have proposed a plan to President Trump for the special ops, DEA working with the Mexican Marina special forces down there to target these cartels and eliminate them beginning this year. And so I hope that they'll do that. The cartels have to be neutralized. The Mexican government officials are so sabotaged by the cartels, they're afraid to attack them head on because they're afraid they're going to get assassinated. And that's what's happened. That's why the Mexican government can't handle this alone in eliminating the threat of the cartels. They have to do it with the United States.
Yeah. I mean, the majority of them, of course, are fearful of them, but there are some that have been on the take down there in the government, which have enabled them and emboldened the cartels. Is there an absolute way for us to deal with them?
Oh, absolutely. We know where the six major cartels are located. We know their geographical location, primarily out of the Golden Triangle down there near Sinaloa. So we track them through intelligence. We know that where they control, where they're located. And so with affirmative military action, covertly, we can go in and destroy where they're located. And that's what you have to do. You can't let them continue to infiltrate and support the gangs in America, drug trade, and so on any longer, because it is just tremendous, the damage it's doing on the American people and our youth.
Yeah, exactly. How does the deep state factor into a danger to our national security here?
Well, the deep state still is alive and well, though the president and his team are trying to eliminate him as much as they can. But the deep state is going to change based on what Attorney General Barr and Durham come up with. And that supposedly is going to be released between now and June. And so the deep state operatives at the senior level, emanating from the Obama White House, through the State Department, Hillary Clinton, through the FBI, Comey, McCabe, Justice Department, and the others there, Strzok and Lisa Page, all of these people, Brennan, Clapper, these were all threats that conducted this deep state coup against an elected president. But we have to hold that account for the American people. There has to be equal justice. These high-level officials, and you know what I did in working with General McInerney and Admiral Lyons on Benghazi.
Yes.
Where these same people lied to Congress and the American people about what really happened in Benghazi and didn't support a rescue operation to save those four Americans. We have all the information on that. So all of those things revert back to deep state operatives now still in Defense Department. Department of State is still heavily embedded with them, yeah. FBI to some degree, and the CIA. So, anyhow.
Isn't the problem with many of these different deep state operatives is that some of them are not appointed? They are they're in there for life. Isn't that a problem?
Well, as we've analyzed the deep state, and we've written a very detailed paper on it, there are four levels in the deep state. Number one are your political appointees, all right? Mm-hmm. The second are what we call the SES, Senior Executive Service, GS 16, or 17, 18s, or 19, something like that, government service titles.
Right.
And then below that, you have the mid-level managers, throughout all of our agencies and organizations that run projects, they run different offices, and they're more or less in the GS 14, 15 area, I would say. And then the fourth state, of course, your normal staff members, which are the lower ranks of your government employees. And so that whole deep state has been infected from the top down through all those four levels. And that's why you see it's such a challenge to determine who they are, and then to make sure they don't work for the government of the United States against our president.
Yeah.
And of course, the left wing, the Schumers and the Pelosi's, they want to encourage those people to stay in there so they have people that can be called whistleblowers from time to time, just like we saw with Russia and the Ukraine deal. So, that's a state of affairs. I mean, our government has become so corrupt over the last several decades, and the president's trying to wipe that out and doing it through a reality prism again.
Yeah. You know, as you said, there has to be there can't be two levels of justice, and that's why I believe that they should have prosecuted McCabe, even if they didn't think they were going to win the case, just so Americans can see that you just can't skate.
That's exactly right. I understand he's not off the hook.
Oh, I hope not. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he's not off the hook. There's some other charges in there that Durham has on him.
Oh, really?
Yes.
No, that's good news. Paul, what would you advise the president to do, not do, or do differently concerning all these threats to our national security?
Well, a great commander-in-chief, a great leader, a great general will look at all of those threats And if it's an internal threat, then he's got to look at the agencies and the states, particularly the governors, and even local officials, to work as a team to thwart those threats and take positive action against them. For example, in Montana, we've had a big meth problem that's emanated from Seattle through Spokane over to the Flathead Valley.
Wow.
And our local officials have been very, very focused, proactive in eliminating that. Much of the hospital patients that have come in are as a result of meth. Those are the kind of things we can do up and down the line. A lot of things have to be solved, of course, at the county, city level, as well as the state government level and the federal government. So, again, working as a team, identifying those threats, coming up with a plan to eliminate them is what you do as a leader.
Right. So as you're saying, some of those things have to be done at a local level. It's time for the voters, the citizens, to hold their representatives accountable and tell them to stop playing politics, correct?
Exactly. And that's what we had. We had at this American First rally that we had here last Saturday night. That's one of the things we focused on. And we had a lot of local politicians and state politicians at our event again last Saturday night.
Really? So, what were the topics?
Well, we highlighted Charlie Kirk, the head of Turning Point USA, and he was our guest speaker. We flew him in from Chicago. And boy, what a great young man he is.
Yeah, he is.
He could be the future president of the United States. And he's only 26 years old. I met him when he was 19. And I was on his board and helped support him since that period of time. But marvelous young man. And if you haven't interviewed him on your show yet, you should. But he's outstanding. And it turned out 651 people.
Fabulous. Oh, my gosh, that's great. Very important question here. Paul, please tell the listeners where they can follow and support your excellent work. And if you have any of those documents available, I'll make sure I'll link them for them.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. Our organization is called the Stand Up America U.S. Foundation. Stand Up America came about in 2015, funded by Soros, George Soros, to counter me at Stand Up America. So, and your listeners should not get confused with Stand Up America, which is a left-leaning Soros-funded organization, but ours, which is Stand Up America U.S. Foundation. Our website is standupamericaus.org. We put out a twice a month newsletter. We distribute the copies of our project plans that we provide the president, and we're happy to share those. Our email contact is standupamericausa1@gmail.com. So that's the way best to contact. And we have three social media sites. So join us. We put out a lot of information to almost 50,000 people every morning from our social media sites.
That's excellent. And, of course, you yourself are in social media, so we can also do that.
Right.
Okay. So, as always, I will have those links in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the On Air button, and right under the show description, you'll find all the links and info that Paul just shared. Thanks so much, Paul, for, again, sharing your brilliant assessments with us. We look forward to your return to the show. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.